Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, Tom Lawler is with us. He's sitting at the corner of Cadillac and Engineering. It's pretty exciting. He's got a couple of war stories for us, all coming up next on TWRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by Max Connect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey friends, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. Got me one right there. Glad you could join us and welcome in. We're going to have a super exciting show today. I really don't know what all is in store. We had a pre-show and I thought, man, this is going to be a great show. Because our guest is Tom Lawler. We'll bring him in just a minute. I'm coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee, where I am, you know, I've been COVID quarantined for a good part of the last year, like a lot of you have. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville, Tennessee. Thanks a lot to Telos Alliance for giving me an hour off on Thursdays and some equipment here to help me produce the show. I was just playing with this IP intercom today, and you can listen to different radio stations, because I got radio stations going into it. HD stations.
On the deck, it's the extreme one.
How about that? Anyway, really cool equipment. Thanks a lot, Telos Alliance, for helping us bring the show to the engineering world. All right. Here in Nashville, it's cold, it's cloudy, it's yucky, but here in the studio, it's nice and warm. I wonder what it is like over at Tom Lawler's place. Tom is our guest. I'm so excited to have Tom on. Tom, welcome in. Good to see you.
Hello, Kirk. Good afternoon. Right now it is, according to our RCS temp update program, 35 and partly cloudy here in the North Hills of Pittsburgh.
You know, I said it was cold. It's actually not that cold. It's 54 degrees here. I let the dog out a while ago and it felt chilly, but it's just because it just looks bad outside. So good to see you, Tom. I've known you on, you know, Facebook for years now, and I always thought that's a way out dude. I mean, he's pretty opinionated about some things. And so I'm so glad that we got together to do the show. Good to see you.
And good to see all you right. too, Kirk.
Yeah. Yeah, we have a name for the show. It's Cadillac Radio Engineering with Tom Lawler. And we're going to find out why we're calling it that in just a minute. And by the way, you know, this show is number 530. And we used to try to do every 10 shows, we would call it a war stories episode. And we've kind of gotten away from that lately. It just turned out that sometimes the guest that we had scheduled for a divide by 10 show was not somebody with war stories, but something, some other thing to tell. But we're going to get a little bit back in that swing today. Tom has a couple of war stories for us that will make you laugh, will make you cry, and will make you glad that didn't happen to me. So that's coming up. Hey, I got one more quick announcement to make, and that is about Radio Guide. At radio-guide.com. The new edition is out, the electronic edition. It's on the web at radio-guide.com. Ray Topp is the publisher and has always some great, great stories in here. A lot of times, you know, Ray publishes this great big format that has, a lot of times he has room for more in-depth stories. Tommy Gray, for example, has written an article about the Linux connection and getting around the Windows frustration syndrome. Wiley Baswell, customer service in 2020. You know, companies keep changing in how they're giving out customer service. So some things that you probably ought to know. And my friend Steve Tuzanu has written miscellaneous tech tips and thoughts, probably a little bit like John Bissett's Workbench article that he writes. But Steve writes a lot of good stuff in here. You'll find in-depth articles as well as tips and tricks in radio-guide.com. Thanks a lot to Ray Topp. And glad to be sharing some time with him. Okay, time to jump into this show with Tom Lawler. Tom, one of the things that just always comes about in your posts on Facebook is I see you with a lot of these big cars, these big land yachts. And as an engineer, it ain't my first choice. So you gotta start out by telling us about what is your connection with these big, beautiful, graceful, gas-guzzling, sweet ride cars. What is that about?
Well, my dad owned a limousine business in Houston when I was a kid. And so I always grew up around big Lincolns and Cadillacs. And my grandfather, my great grandfather always bought Cadillacs as their Sunday car. So they'd have the everyday car, the everyday truck, but for special occasions, there was always a Cadillac DeVille or a Fleetwood in the driveway. And my dad would sometimes pick me up or drop me off from elementary school in a black Cadillac limo. So I was really cool among the elementary school kids for a while.
Oh, that's awesome. Going to school in a limo. Oh, years ago, I borrowed the station limo from a rock station in Lexington, Kentucky, WKQQ. I borrowed they had a stretch limo that used to belong to the Kentucky governor. It was part of the governor's stable. Is livery the right word, or does that refer to something else? What does the word livery mean?
That's sort of like almost like a cab for hire, like a black car for hire.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. I drove the stretch limo home just because I could, you know, and I drove it to church Sunday morning, and you know, it had the nasty rock and roll station logo on the side, so that was fun. So back when your dad had this limo company in Houston, was it all Cadillacs, or were there a variety of cars, or just one car? How did that work out?
There was a mix of cars. He had a garage space in suburban Houston where he had two Cadillacs and three Lincoln Town Cars. He had a white Cadillac for weddings. He had the black Cadillac for black tie events. And then the Lincolns were a mix of colors for proms, airport runs, other events. And it's funny you mentioned a radio station limo. This, if you want, we can jump into this war story.
Oh, absolutely. Let's start with the war story. It's going to be great. Yeah.
So way back when, in the late 80s, Kalawell in Houston had a Rolls limousine that they would use to shuttle around stars and guests on the station. And one night, my dad was doing an airport run up Interstate 45 in Houston, and he noticed that the Kalawell Rock and Rolls limo was broken down on the side of the road. And he thought, oh, it happens. It's a Rolls British car. He thought, all right, let me see what happens when I make my run back. Well, the Rolls was still broken down on the side of the freeway in Houston. By the time he dropped off the airport fare and was coming back, he pulled over, and the promotions person that was driving was like, look, tell you what, I'll finish your run. That way you don't have whoever was in the limo, you know, angry at you for the car breaking down. But I want to work out a deal. I'll be your limo service if you guys give me commercial airtime.
He kind of knew
how media worked, because he was in business in Houston for a couple of years, and there were some other limo operators that showed him the way. And at the time, Kalawell had a morning show called Stevens and Pruitt, and they were one of the bigger morning shows in Texas, and especially in Houston at the time, because they were outrageous, they were, you know, a bit raunchy, but they were funny. And they had a cast of characters. And the deal was, okay, Stevens and Pruitt will do your live reads, but you got to come on the air with them and see if you can actually hang with the punches. So Dad goes up, I want to say it was 510 Lovett Boulevard in Montrose area of Houston one morning. The first thing, my dad is a big guy like me. My dad was taller than I am. He was about 6'4", at the time probably weighed 350 pounds. And the first thing that, you know, Jim looks and goes, how do you drive the car with the limo tilting to the left all the time? And from that, they were off and running. And Dad became one of the producers of Stevens and Pruitt and got the nickname Tubby. Ended up going out, and anytime there was a Stevens and Pruitt event, there was always one of his limos. He would always be going out with Locke Siebenhausen doing stunts. And because Dad got involved with Stevens and Pruitt and got into radio, that's how I got into radio, because Dad would always bring me with him to the station if I had a Monday off from school.
So that's your radio connection. That's how you get started.
Yeah. All because bad British engineering is why I have a career.
Now, it didn't dawn on me till you really repeated the story here. It was when you said it was a Rolls limo, you mean it was actually a Rolls Royce limo, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Wow. Wow. And that's the one that's got the figurine on the top of the radiator.
Yeah. The Our Lady of something or other figurine on the top.
Our Lady of Eternal Roadside Distress.
Exactly.
Something like that. And it shouldn't be surprising to your dad that the Rolls was still on the side of the road when he came back the other way, because that Rolls ain't going to fix itself.
I don't think he was surprised. Maybe he thought they would get a tow truck out there quick because it was a rate, because it was KOL in Houston. But luckily for him, they didn't. And lucky for me, they didn't.
So in a way, you know, we tend to like or dislike, but we tend to be comfortable with what we grew up with. So here you are. You grew up with big land yacht cars and radio.
Yes.
And here you are. Yeah. We've got another war story coming up later in the show with Tom about, you know, maybe a Cadillac isn't the best car to take to a transmitter site, except especially one with a muddy road. But we're gonna save that a bit. Tom, are you in the Pittsburgh area? Is that where you are?
Yes, I live in the Pittsburgh metro area.
And you know, on your lower third, we've put Cadillac engineer. But you work for an automation company doing support, right?
I do. I work for RCS, and my official title is field services technician. I get to travel around the country, or in the case of 2020 and now 2021, work from home. But I'm the guy that gets to install and set up Zeta, G Selector, RCS News. I get to do server swaps, upgrades for next gen. And in fact, next week I'm going to Philadelphia to do a whole station swap for WXPN.
Ah, okay. So you're going in person, but I am amazed at how much people like you can just do remotely. As long as you're given access, I mean, whole operating system installs and there's so much that you can do that travel. I'm not saying it's not necessary, because obviously you're going to Pittsburgh to you know, help swap out hardware and everything, but that's amazing what you can do remotely now.
When this first happened, we really weren't sure how this was going to go, because there's, you know, sometimes we become part of their local IT department for the week, where we help troubleshoot problems with Ethernet switches, because if the switch isn't happy, then we get issues with audio and you know, GPIO commands. But as long as we have people, you know, good tech people in the building, and they can get us in, we can do the database conversion, we can install, you know, Zeta, we can install SQL, we can install everything and get it going. And with Zoom and Teams, we do the training. And you know, again, we've done numerous station installs and upgrades where we haven't set foot in the facility.
That is so cool. And I've experienced that from a couple of other automation vendors in the last year and a half. And obviously everybody's had to up their skills in that regard. And obviously you have. Hey, we're talking to Tom Lawler. He does work for RCS, and I want to hear some of the cool things that Zeta, G Selector, those products are doing. I'm interested in Zeta to Go, or what you can cloudify at this point. Tom's also going to be giving us some real good advice on mics and mic processing, audio interfaces, and audio quality on the air. Tom is really, really good at sussing out. No, guys, don't do that. That's where your problem is, right there. So that's coming up as well. I'm Kirk Harnack at This Week in Radio Tech. Tom Lawler, the Cadillac engineer, is our guest. We got more war stories coming up. Our show this week is brought to you in part by some great people, our friends at Max Connect. And Gary Morrill is here to give you a good reason why you should check out Max Connect. Gary?
I'm Gary Morrill, Midwest Regional Director of Engineering for Alpha Media. When I first spoke with Josh Bone about Max Connect, he told me they'd work great for remote transmitter sites where connectivity was a challenge. And you know, he's absolutely right. We even have sites where we're using this as a backup to our STL using Max Connect's dual carrier option, and it works perfectly. We also have times where we need to be able to get out to a venue where it's kind of challenging because everybody and his brother is trying to stream video at the same time, like at a big sporting event. And you know what? Our data gets through every time because it's prioritized packet data. It works for us. It'll work for you. Max Connect. Check it out.
Indeed. Max Connect Wireless is the website. You can check it out and look at the funny spelling. Suncast is going to put, there it is, maxconnectwireless.com. It is single carrier or dual carrier prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. I've got one of the 4G LTE modems right here. This one happens to be made by Cradlepoint. They also have Pepwave, but it's not the 4G LTE modem that's the secret here. It's the SIM card that goes inside. The SIM card is from actually Max Connect Wireless, and it works over all your favorite carriers. If you know that AT&T is strong in your area, for example, you can get on the AT&T network, and you will have prioritized data packet service over AT&T, but only with Max Connect. I encourage you to check those out. Our show this week in Radio Tech is also brought to you by Angry Audio. Don't get mad, get angry. My friend Mike Dosh really designed some awesome gear. He's designed this piece of gear right here. I know we've been talking about it for a year now, and it's a good reason we have, because with everybody working from home, or so many of people working from home, you might need to get a phone caller on the air. And yes, you can remote into your phone system back at the station. Can be a little tricky depending on which one you have. You know which one I like. But if you need to put a caller on your studio, on your home studio, podcast, whatever, bring a guest in, bring a VIP or expert in, use this. This is the Bluetooth audio gadget from Angry Audio. This is a really professional device. It's got a spring-loaded pairing switch right here. You can put this thing in the pairing mode and pair. Yeah, if you have different jocks coming into a studio, you know, COVID separated, right? Then they can each pair their phone with this. You can just pair your phone with it, obviously. Here's a little Bluetooth antenna in the front. And on the back are your pro audio connections, XLR connectors. And there's even an AES digital output on it as well. So if your console is AES input, you can use that. It also has, you know, analog inputs and outputs as well, plus stereo. Now, why would you use stereo for a phone call? Well, you actually wouldn't. But if your phone has some high quality audio on it, maybe you went out in the field and got some stuff. Maybe you downloaded some songs that you need to play on the air. This is your device right here. You'll get the highest possible quality using Bluetooth high quality mode from your phone into this and right into your audio console. The Bluetooth audio gadget is from angryaudio.com. You can buy these at most any broadcast equipment dealer, but make sure you get the right thing. Don't get a knockoff. Don't get mad either. Get angry. Angry Audio. They also have all your Studio Hub gear. So if you need Studio Hub gear to wire your studio up, highly recommended. Instead of soldering and burning your fingers, just do this. Click. And you are wired up in stereo with either AES or analog audio, and wire that into your AOIP system or baseband audio. All right. Thanks a lot to Max Connect and Angry Audio for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We're with Tom Lawler. And Tom, we wanted to talk a bit about, let's move to mics, if you don't mind. Mics and mic processing. You've got some particular ideas. In fact, you're using quite a nice microphone there that a lot of folks wish they had. When I first started in commercial radio, that was the mic that I had. Remind me of which Shure model that is.
This is the Shure SM5B.
Man, do you sound that good, or is it the mic?
It is the microphone. I don't sound this good.
Now, come on.
There are very few things in my studio that I refuse to part with. This is one of them. For very good reason. It's the mic that everyone loves and no one wants to get rid of. I was very fortunate that I was able to trade do some horse trading. I can be like Klinger in that regards, and was able to grab this mic and, you know, use it in my home studio.
What is the fascination why do people prefer the SM5B?
It just has such a warm, smooth sound, and you can get very close to it without overloading it or overdriving it. And it pairs very well with almost any mic processor that you throw at it, or no processing at all, just a good solid preamp. And that's why people covet these microphones. And don't get me wrong. I the Shure SM7B is a good microphone, but it doesn't quite have the vocal warmth that the SM5B has.
You see those 5Bs in so many studios. Of course, the 7 is just popular as well. You see a lot more of those. When I started in commercial radio, we had that 5B like you've got there. And I remember the phone was not in great shape. It was kind of sad, but I don't think we had money to buy a new phone. But the audio, the mic processor that we had on that microphone was, it was a Shure Level Lock. Are you familiar with that thing, the Shure Level Lock?
I've only read stories about that. That was before my time. However, I was told that it was not a very graceful sounding audio processor.
Well, you know, I didn't know any better station. So all I could judge by was, you know, what was showing up on my AM radio in the car. But my impression, and of course it was all analog chain. So our headphones were tied into the tuner in the rack, right? So we were listening off the air to WEKY 1340 and the Shure Level Lock, and I want you to tell me about your favorite mic processors in a minute. The Shure Level Lock what it would do was it was like there was this hand and it would reach out through the Shure SM5B and it would reach into your vocal cords and it would go past that and it would reach down and I don't want to be too, it would reach down and grab your man parts and pull them out and shove them up to the top of the tower.
Because it made you sound, it made you sound like a manly man.
Unfortunately, this microphone doesn't make me sound quite like Charlie Van Dyke, but it gets me in the ballpark.
That's a great name. I felt like Charlie Van Dyke, even with my pipsqueak high school voice back then. So what do you do for mic processing? What are some of the ones that you like?
I personally, if you can get your hands on the Valley People mic processor and it's still in good working condition, that is a great mic processor. It sounds so smooth. It really brings out the resonance in your voice. And it's great for anyone that's doing a classic hits or wants a sort of a vintage, really compressed Z100 sounding microphone. My current favorite mic processor, just for flexibility, is the Wheatstone M1, because it has a clean preamp, which it needs, because if you look at the output of a EV RE27 or RE20, it's a very hot mic and it doesn't need a lot of help before the first, you know, compression gain or compression stage. These mics require a decent low noise preamp, and the M1 pairs great with this microphone for that purpose. And I have different presets. I have a preset for doing my radio VO work, which is what it's on now. Then I have a different preset for doing dry VO work that I send off to stations. That way they can tailor it more to their liking, but it's still there and helps me print as opposed to just a naked microphone.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Okay. Cool. Also, I think you wanted to chat a bit about audio interfaces. You know, these days people have a microphone in their home, and they have to get it plugged in somehow to their laptop or their desktop computer to get that audio into there for voice tracking or production at home or podcast production. What do you consider to be important in figuring out what to do about this mic interface?
Well, number one, I would never use the built-in audio connectors on your computer, be it laptop or desktop. There's so much noise from on the onboard sound card that you'll see the little blips in the waveform that when you're recording it in your favorite, you know, digital workstation. The Rodecaster Pro is a good interface for, you know, the EV microphones. It's a little soft if you're pairing it with a Shure SM7 or an SM5. If you can, you know, my personal favorite thing is I love the Behringer USB sound cards, because they just plug your right in your computer, use a generic Windows or Mac or Linux driver, and you've got a great mic interface, and they only run about $60, $70 on Amazon. If all you need is just something that you plug the microphone in and it'll play nicely with the computer.
You know, I have a Behringer. It's the one that'll do 192 kilohertz sampling. So you could use it for a composite output if you're using one of the software FM audio processors. And I actually, Suncast is going to kill me, but I'm going to move this camera around for a sec. I happen to be using this M Audio. I just got a deal on it one time, and I've used this for some years as my audio interface here on This Week in Radio Tech, but it developed a problem. It's a USB-C style of plug on the back of it. And that USB-C plug got willy wonky. I mean, it was kind of bad. It died during one of our Tort podcasts a couple weeks ago. So I took it out, and you know what? I thought it was the USB-C female connector on the circuit board. I thought maybe it had gotten twanged and it needed to be resoldered or something. Turns out it was the plug. It was the male cord. It was the USB-C. It went from USB-A to USB-C on the cord. And you plug this thing in and it had a lot of play in it. And I thought it was the female socket moving around, but no, it was the actual male end of the cord. So I threw that cord away, put a new cord on it, and it's physically, you know, fine now. I'd never seen a USB-C male plug be the problem, and even mechanically the problem. You ever heard of that?
Actually, yes. I love using Omnia SST with 192K sound cards for my in-house test station. since we do RDS and other things with Zeta and NextGen, I need to have a good, you know, standard FM station to test it with. And I have the exciter and the laptop downstairs running everything. Well, all of a sudden the audio card kept disappearing and reappearing. Exactly. I thought it was the connector on the card. Turns out it was the cable that went bad. Yeah. Replaced the cable, and the sound card's rocking and rolling now 6 months later.
Well, the good news is replacing the cable is cheaper than replacing the card. And the good news is also I didn't screw up the circuit board by trying to resolder something that didn't need it.
So. Well, with the pandemic, I don't know, not sure about you guys, but I now buy two of everything because I never know when shipping times are going to go haywire and I'm going to have to have another widget lying around that I'll need. So now I have a spare set of cards on the shelf if something happens again.
Well, circling back around to the Behringer thing, I forget which model I've got, but anyway, it does 192. I want to say I paid more than 70 or 80 bucks for it. I think I paid a little over 100, but I used it for a while in replace of the M audio while I had it out, fixing a problem that didn't exist with it. And the Behringer was great. I was really impressed. I'm not saying it sounded better. I mean, I don't know. There was something about it that I really liked. So there you go.
They're good interfaces, especially if you're just a jock that's tracking and you need something that you know is going to work. It'll work. I've had this one, this little Q502 USB for the past four or five years. Mm-hmm. I take it with me on the road. It's never let me down.
I will give a little bit of advice on these USB interfaces. Years ago, when this was kind of a new thing, I bought a cable that purportedly was mic XLR on one end and USB on the other. And built into the USB plug, there was actually a little sound card circuit in there. So supposedly within the cable, it did the preamping and the conversion for you. It was terrible. The quality of the preamp in there was just horrible. So, I mean, it cost 40 bucks. What do you expect? So don't do that. I've also had some of the, for years we did this show with the Shure X2U. That's a little bullet looking thing that plugs in the back of a microphone or on the cable, and then it's got USB over to the computer. That was actually okay, but the rotary controls on it got dirty over some years, and so it became unusable. I bought a cheap knockoff one also, just XLR into USB, that had a full sound card in it because it, you know, had the earphone output on it. And I picked it up a few months ago, and it died. It just didn't want any good either. So, but I've had great luck with, you know, full size, you know, like this size, you know, of boxes that convert mic into USB. And some, I'm sure, have better specs than others. Focusrite is a popular brand. M Audio is a popular brand. And as you mentioned, the Behringer is a popular brand too. These all work pretty well.
If you can find the Digigram UAX220 mic, it looks like it's purple. And I'm not sure. My father got it from when he worked at Cox in Houston, and I still carry it with me in my case. It is great. You just plug the mic in. It has a cable on it. You can do 48 volt phantom power, and it sounds great, even though it's been out for now 15 years. Though that's another really good generic USB device if you can find it on eBay.
We're talking to Tom Lawler. He's with us on This Week in Radio Tech, and we got another war story coming up. But first, we're going to talk about some things about audio quality. We talked about mics and mic pre's, but Tom, you forensically go into radio stations, especially when you're setting up a new automation. And I know you have the station's best interest at heart. You have the good audio as your motivation for looking a bit into their song libraries. And I think you've got some horror stories right there about what you find in stations' libraries. Let's talk about that. Tell me your thoughts on forensically looking through a library and
don't get me wrong. I love our clients. They are amazing people. They're great broadcasters, but you know, things happen over the years, especially if you're converting from one automation system to another, that you can go back now. We've had hard disk automation now for over 20 years. But back then, because of hard drive and space constraints, we had to use MP2, which could sound okay on analog FM because, as we discussed a little bit in the pre-show notes, the older generation of processors could hide a lot of sins of codec artifacts. But now that we have, you know, processors like the 11 that are out there, or the 9 that really just make everything put out there in the open, you can hear that coding, especially if there's cascading codecs, if you're running it through an older STL, or if you have a IP-based STL that's not in uncompressed mode, or that's not using a newer codec. So when I go in there and I'm doing the database conversion, I usually take a note and see what the file size is. And a lot of times there are MP2s in there. Or if I'm on site, I'll look at how they're dubbing music in. And there have been stations where they've dubbed music in off of YouTube. Or sometimes if it's a little bit better, it's Spotify, but not the premium version.
Okay.
And to most people, they just don't hear it. They hear it in the production room where it's not running through the STL. It's not running through, at some stations, an analog console, going through a 10 or 15 year old DA with dried out caps, then going to the STL that may or may not be compressed, and then finally hitting the processor at the transmitter site. All those things add up. And you've got to start with as pristine audio quality as you can. And, you know, with the size of hard drives and how cheap they are today, there's not really a good reason to do MP2 or MP3. You can do uncompressed wave with a terabyte hard drive and have, you know, 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 songs in the library. That's my pet peeve with radios. Whenever I would come into a station as an employee, I would go through the library and try and find, okay, what's an MP2? What sounds like it was dubbed, you know, through a board that was misaligned, and then go through and replace it with better copies of songs that I have, because I collect music. I've got 5 terabytes of music at my disposal here at my house.
Yeah. You know, in defense of radio station programmers who have songs on the air that turn out to not be of the greatest quality, In their defense, I want to point this out. If you listen to a song that's been encoded as MP2, MP3, even AAC, and it's been encoded once, and you play it back just over an ordinary linear system, audio console speakers, in other words, not through a multiband aggressive audio processor, if you just play it back, it's probably going to sound almost as good or within spitting distance of linear. As you know, my old boss, Steve Church, used to say, AAC audio at 320 kilobits per second is basically unimpeachable. And I believe that. But that's not running it through a processor. When, as you point out, when you run audio that's been encoded and then, you know, listening back to it decoded, when you run that through a multiband audio processor, all of a sudden, all the assumptions made by the designers of MP2, MP3, AAC about your listening environment in terms of the dynamic level, all those assumptions become wrong now, because the multiband processor is going to go lift up all these lower parts and put them up in your face, and that means you're going to end up hearing noise and digital artifacts that, if you don't run it through a processor, you won't hear those things. That's not the fault of the processor, because if you run clean linear music through that processor, it's going to sound fine. So it may sound okay to hear an MP2 or an MP3 just off the cuff, but when you dynamically process it, because you're sampling it in some processors, I know, you know, Frank's got some sampling going on at over 700 kilohertz of sampling going on to avoid any aliasing. And yeah, it'll bring up that stuff that you can't hear just sitting in the production room. So take Tom's advice and don't do it. Don't get your songs off YouTube. Don't get them off Spotify. And don't get them off File Donkey. Come Remember File Donkey? So, Tom, I got one question about WAV files, though. Isn't it possible to have a WAV file that actually, well, that came from a compressed song, or maybe is in itself in the WAV file compressed? Is that possible?
It is possible. There are a lot of automation systems out there that would put a WAV wrapper on an MP2.
Oh, okay.
And so it is possible. I know Scott Systems did that. So did BSI Simeon, where there would be an MP2 and it would be called WAVE. So it is possible. It is also possible to upsample it. And you basically have to look at it on a scope or in the frequency analysis in your favorite DAW to to find out, okay, there's the holes in the audio that won't be there, if wouldn't be there if it was an uncompressed wave.
So you brought out file size, and I forgot about that as a great telltale. Hey, if it's not, and you know, if it's a linear actual wave file, it's going to be a typical song might be what, 50 megs or so, 40, 50 megs?
40, 50 megs for the average three and a half minute hit. It's when you see dot wave and the file size is 11, 12 megs that you go, okay, that's something's not quite right here.
Well, yeah. And it's too easy and it's too convenient and it's too inexpensive to do it right now. And so keep everything as wave files. I used to think I really couldn't tell the difference until I started demonstrating some stuff for Telos. And I realized that I had some songs that just sounded soft. And I thought, and I had some songs that were like bright, crisp, clear, just punchy. And I realized, yeah, that's right. Half of my library, I've got some stuff I ripped from CD. That's real wave files. And this other stuff I'd had around for a long time, and it was MP3s, even though they're high bit rate.
The cool thing about, you know, some of the great things about the past 20 years is almost everyone that wants broadband can have broadband. And with, you know, bringing it back around to the automation side of things, with our Zeta2Go line of automation, with Zeta2Go, you can upload that WAV file easily right from your computer. And you don't have to compress it down to an MP3, email it to yourself, or send it to your production person. You can load that uncompressed WAV file in right from your browser in Zeta2Go.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah, got connectivity is so much better today. Hey, you're listening or watching This Week in Radio Tech with Kirk Harnack, and my guest is Tom Lawler. You see him posting on Facebook if you're a friend of his there, and you ought to. You ought to be Tom's friend on Facebook. He posts lots of good stuff. Now, we got war stories coming up. Also, I want Tom to tell us a few of the cool secrets and not necessarily inner workings, but you know, what are some of the cool things about automation system these days? I keep hearing a lot about Zeta2Go, and I don't really understand what that is, and maybe Zeta in the cloud, and you know, kind of where things are going in his world of automation. And then we're going to have some cool pictures of Tom's fleet of vehicles, at least two of them anyway, and a war story about that. It's This Week in Radio Tech, episode 530. We're going to hear from my pals at Broadcast Bionics, and you should pay attention too. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Phil from Broadcast Bionics in the UK, and we've been helping broadcasters and podcasters to work remotely for some time. But in 2020, this has become more of a necessity for many. X-Screen, Bionic Studio, and our other products can be fully functional via the internet on a VPN connection or RDP session. If you have any type of Telos VX, HX6 or IQ6, you may already be using the free edition of X-Screen 2, giving you a software interface to go alongside your VSET controller. The subscription edition not only adds a cloud database and unrestricted workstation licenses, but also allows the user to call screen using a USB headset. Bionic Talk Show, part of the Bionic Studio, also allows this. Up until now, it's mainly been used for remote broadcasts, but now more and more stations have call screeners and producers working from home or socially distanced offices. The teams can still collaborate, communicate, and deliver programming with the help of our tools. Many routers will have a VPN option. Your local IT specialist can help with this. Using a VPN, our workstation client software can be run on a home PC or laptop as if it was running on a machine at the studio. With remote desktop, the software still runs on a PC at the station. Simple port forwarding on your router may be all that's required to then control that PC and deliver the headset audio from another device using RDP, which is available as part of Windows. For technical help, our support team are on hand. You can email them on support@bionics.co.uk. Combined with our Anywhere and Skype TX for radio products, broadcast quality audio can be delivered from contributors around the corner or around the globe. They can even instant message with the shared chat windows and see the now playing information from within the Anywhere remote web interface. For more information, go to bionic.radio. We're helping broadcasters around the world to adapt to the new normal with innovative tools from Broadcast Bionics.
Clever, clever people at Broadcast Bionics. I've been to their shop. Actually, I've been to both of their shops. They moved a few years ago. And just amazing people, really good programmers, and they make some tools that we as broadcasters can use to sound relevant, local, and much more connected with our audiences. They're good at that. Check them out at bionic.radio. Thanks a lot. sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. And because they do, it's even one more reason why you should check out their website, give them a call, give them an email, and find out what they can do for you. Okay, it's Kirk Harnack, Tom Lawler along. And Tom, don't worry, we're going to get to these war stories, or this other war story about the mud and the axle and all that. But I want to talk for a few minutes about automation. We've had other automation manufacturers on this show from time to time over the years, and I really don't know that much about Zeta, what Zeta is different from the traditional RCS product, and what is Zeta to go, and how is cloud involved in all this? Can you help me understand some of that stuff?
Sure. Well, RCS has been involved in radio station automation for many years with our master control product, and we were merged together with PSI, which is Next Gen. So Next Gen, RCS Master Control, and Selector, G Selector, and Zeta are under the RCS umbrella now. And that's why I do support for all those products. And about 10, 15 years ago, we took a look at Next Gen and went, this is great, this is working, but what can we do to make it better? What can we do to make it more flexible? And how can we get some of the friendly UI that's in Master Control and weld that together with the rock solid reliability of NextGen? And that became Zeta. And over the years, Zeta has matured. We've added a lot of great features to it. And it's a very powerful automation system because of the database. It uses Microsoft SQL. And because of that, we're able to eliminate one of my favorite bugaboos, cart numbers. Aside from spots, no cart numbers are needed in Zeta if it's paired with G Select.
What? And how does that work?
So every asset in Zeta has what's called a GUID, a General Universal ID, and it is specific to that Zeta install or that Zeta system. And you can take the same piece of audio, put it in two separate Zetas, they will have different GUIDs because they're two different pieces of information.
Okay.
And Zeta and G Selector are integrated. So I have at my home setup here in Pittsburgh, I have Zeta and G Selector running in tandem. So when I drag something from Windows into Zeta, load it in the library, I put all the coding in, the title, the artist, the category, any sound codes, I hit save, boom, it instantly goes to G Selector. It goes into the category I want and it starts scheduling that asset.
And the GUID is assigned automatically?
The GUID is assigned automatically from Microsoft SQL database.
Okay. And it's nothing that I have to look at or deal with. I just know the friendly name of this audio, right?
The friendly name of this audio is, Beatles, Twist and Shout. But
yeah,
you open up the cart info or the cut info in the library and it gives you the GUIDs. That way this is the ID for it's like a fingerprint. Each song has its own fingerprint in the Zeta system to make sure that we can keep track of everything and not have duplicates, not have conflicts, things like that. And that's one of the reasons that our system is so powerful is because it can scale up and handle terabytes worth of audio. It's great for small broadcasters, but it works for the biggest broadcasters as well. And I came from a shop that would use other automation systems and they're great. But when I saw Zeta and G Selector work together, I don't touch my stations here because I have Zeta runs my web streams. I don't touch them. I set up the clocks, the rotations. I just drag audio in. As long as I put everything in the proper category, G Selector schedules itself. There is no exporting the log. The log goes from G Selector right to Zeta immediately. That's how tight this integration is. And that's why I love it, because everything talks to itself and there's no having to write down on a sheet of paper, okay, these are the songs that we added in the automation system. Now I got to go to the music scheduler, put all that info in, because you're doing double the work. This just does half the work for you. As long as you put it in Zeta, goes in G Selector.
And so I hear this RC advertising for Zeta to go. What is that about?
So using Microsoft's information web services, we're able to have Zeta to go, where you basically, through a VPN or another secured network, you pull up on your browser of choice. It's platform agnostic. It can be Chrome, Firefox, Edge, and you type in the IP of the Zeta server. Goes over the VPN or over your private network, and it pulls up Zeta on HTML5. We've basically have, you know, so you're tunneled into the main Zeta, wherever that may be at the radio station, but you have the ability to control what we call the sequencer. So what's playing on the air, you have the ability to add audio to the library. You can remotely voice track and you can edit the log. You can, you know, you can even fire off hotkeys remotely. So if you're at an event, you can do a Bordopolis live remote with Zeta to go.
Wow. Okay. So the to go part really means you can deal with it remotely on almost mm-hmm. any device. Wow.
Yeah. Okay. Because we're running a web server, and the same is true with our other products, Acquire to go and G Selector to go, where we have a web server running on the G Selector and Zeta server at the station, and you just go into that on your browser, and it pulls up G Selector to go. You select the station, and you can schedule your logs. You can manipulate them however you like. And the same with Acquire, which is our traffic system.
Did the COVID lockdowns speed up anything about deploying these products?
Yes, it did.
Yeah.
There were a lot of broadcasters who all of a sudden they couldn't have multiple talent in the studio. They couldn't have multiple people in the station at the same time. And we had a rush of people going, okay, we've got Zeta, but we never set up Zeta to go. Or, hey, we love our automation system now, but it can't do this. Let's get Zeta so we can do remote tracking specifically because of Zeta to go. And not to mention with our other products, we have NextGen, and you can do remote tracking in NextGen, but it's a little different because you're using a standalone workstation and doing what we call WAN casting to pull down the log and then send back the voice tracks. It's not quite as seamless as with Zeta to go, where you're in the station recording it and you can manipulate the logs in real time.
It's great to see this technology is just moving along. Does RCS through Zeta or anything have a solution where one could either operate in the cloud or move to the cloud? If you had to, you know, get out of your building for some reason, you couldn't go back. Do you have some way to handle that?
We do. In fact, I'll be setting that up at XPN next week, and we've done it for lots of broadcasters already. It's called Zeta Disaster Recovery, where your Zeta lives in the cloud, sequencer and all. So when you add audio to your library on your local Zeta, it gets shot up to your Zeta Disaster Recovery cloud account. Your logs, your traffic, all that gets shot up there, and it's playing back in real time. And if and when you need to activate that and have the audio going directly to your transmitter site, it's right there when you need it if there's ever a problem at the studio.
You mentioned Sequencer, and I've heard of this product. Tell me quickly what Sequencer does for you.
Well, the Sequencer is one of the modules in Zeta. The Sequencer is what actually plays back the audio in sequence. It's like NextGen's control room.
Oh.
So in Zeta, we have play devices for the sequencer. We have play devices for hotkeys. Zeta really is a very Swiss Army knife software in that you can tell it to do anything almost anywhere. And that's one of the reasons why it's so flexible is that you can actually close out Zeta's UI and everything is still running in the background because we have all these helper processes running the station in the background.
Gotcha. Okay. Sounds good. So, yeah, I like the Swiss Army knife analogy. All right, we're gonna go ahead and get to this this next war story, but first I'd like to look at the fleet of vehicles here, at least the two big Tom Lawler approved engineering vehicles. What do we want to look at first? You have two pictures to show us, I think.
Let's look at Igor, the black 88 Cadillac Brougham.
All right, Suncat. Oh yeah, yeah.
That is the ride that was part of my wedding this past October with my wife, Jenny. She drove herself to the venue, Phipps, here in Pittsburgh, in Igor. Mm-hmm. I purchased it from another radio engineer in Michigan, Mr. Paul Wildland. And I love that car. That is the car that I am forbidden from selling, according to my wife.
That looks like a big, comfy car. I'm sure I took rides in those back in the 80s, and that's an 88, you say, right?
Yes.
Well, let's look at the other car, and then I want you to tell me about what you've done about improving the radios, because the radios are probably, the original ones would be from 88. So.
Oh, what's this?
So this is my other big land yacht. This is the 93 Cadillac Fleetwood Brougham with, of course, mm-hmm. padded vinyl roof. And that I picked up from another gentleman here in Pittsburgh. My wife and I were driving and I saw this car parked and I thought, oh, I just have to leave a note. I left a note for the guy on the windshield. He called me and we worked a deal and he's like, you know, I got a 76 Eldorado. I don't drive the gold caddy, you know, buy it off me. And we did. And this is our road trip car. This is our road trip car.
Oh, you ride in style. That is so nice. And that, now, I never knew this fancy word, Brougham, or some people say a Brougham.
Yes.
What is that? What, I see that associated with Cadillacs. What is a Brougham?
So there was a gentleman in 18th century England named Henry Brougham who designed a closed carriage for upper crust people to ride around in. So the driver was exposed to the elements, but the passengers were in a closed carriage. And vehicles of that style were called Broughams. And Cadillac made vehicles in that style when they first, you know, started producing luxury vehicles in the 1900s. Okay. And so that's how Cadillac Brougham came about. The Fleetwood came about because there's a town here in central Pennsylvania called Fleetwood, PA, where there was a huge body factory. And they made exquisite bodies for luxury cars because you could buy the chassis of a Lincoln or a Cadillac or a Buick, but you could put a Fleetwood body on it. Well, Fisher Body wanted that business. So Fisher Body from Detroit bought Fleetwood. So that's how you got the Cadillac Fleetwood and eventually Fleetwood Brougham. And Fleetwood Brougham to Elegance if you wanted your tufted leather seats or tufted velour seats.
I wondered what the d'Elegance meant. That's the tufted. That's the one with the pincushion look, right?
Or the, yes, that's yes.
Ah, okay. No fine Corinthian leather there. It's real by golly leather. it's a mark.
No, leather. No, no. But I do have a Ricardo Montalban Chrysler New Yorker Fifth Avenue as the winter beater car.
Why so you I have one of those?
Oh my god! Yes, I slum it in the Fifth Avenue in the wintertime.
All right. Now, these were not meant to be engineering cars, although I think you could fit in a large Nautel transmitter in the back of one of these trunks, right? In these trunks. These are huge trunks.
They're 20 cubic foot trunks. So, yes, you can fit one of Mr. Jeff Welton's lovely beer coolers in there if you really tried. I still take care of, I help take care of a station in Youngstown, Ohio. And mm-hmm. at the time, I didn't have access to a truck. Now we have a Suburban. The Suburban is my wife's main vehicle, but I use it on occasion when needed. So there was an issue at the Three Tower Array where during the day when it was on the center tower, everything was fine. But as soon as it went to night power, kick off. So I had to hustle out there and the station transmitter site is located near a gas facility on the Ohio-PA border, literally on the line between Ohio and Pennsylvania. And the road was not very well maintained. Mm. And it was wintertime. The ground was soft because we had a thaw. But I had to hustle out there and figure out why this transmitter is not wanting to stay on. So I get out there, and I get out there in the black caddy in Igor and proceed to get the rear tires stuck up to the axle in muck.
Oh, was this before or after the wedding?
This was before the wedding. This was before
the wedding. And okay. Yes. Okay. All right.
This was before the wedding. And so every year for my birthday, my mom buys me a AAA membership because she knows that I like to drive older vehicles that are not so reliable. Okay. So I call AAA. They send a tow truck out. And because this is more than 70 feet off of the main road, the guy drives back the big tow truck, and he just looks at me and just starts laughing because he can't believe that this city slicker is that foolish to take a Cadillac back to this transmitter site in the woods. So after the laughter died down and I slipped the guy a little extra green, he decided that he would take pity on me and yank the Cadillac out of the muck.
Even though it was beyond their usual.
Even though it was beyond their usual. I think the limit is 70 feet off the paved road. And if this was way off the paved road as it was like a back by an oil well. But again, a little green and some pity, and the guy managed to yank out Igor from the muck.
Oh, man. Oh, my. So what, was there any damage to the car?
Luckily, no. Luckily, no damage to the car. The ground was just soft, but he was able to pull it out and not damage the bumper or the axle. But I learned my lesson. Number one, I agreed to keep taking care of the station for a time, as long as they would put down some stone, so I at least had a gravel path.
Yeah.
And shortly thereafter, I bought a Suburban.
Oh, I was going to ask, what do you use now? My vehicle of choice when I was doing contract engineering was a Nissan 300ZX. So I think an 87 Nissan 300ZX. And I took that car up some crazy roads, and I scraped the oil pan a few times, but I would nimbly pick my way, you know, avoiding the ruts, and I would bring spectrum analyzers, and I could fit 9 toolboxes in the back of that Nissan 300ZX. In fact, when I eventually switched to a Ford Explorer, I had to get rid of one toolbox. The Explorer had less room in it than the back of the 300ZX.
Oh,
I love my Suburbans. It's a bit like using a sledgehammer to put a nail in the wall, but it can haul everything. It goes anywhere, and it's a comfy ride. It rides almost as good as the Cadillacs, which is why we have the Suburban.
Now, we talked a few minutes ago about these cars don't have their original radios, because now we've got new technology. We've got RDS, which either didn't exist or wasn't popular in 88 or 93, and we have HD radio now. So tell me about what improvements you've done in your vehicles with more modern audio systems.
Well, as lovely as the engineers at AC Delco were in Dayton about putting CQAM and AMAX in these radios back then.
Really? How cool.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, the 93 Fleetwood is a CQAM AMAX tuner originally. The FM receivers on those are barn door wide, so there's no selectivity whatsoever. And in today's dial, where every spot is packed with a translator or a fill-in or a booster, the dial is a mess when traveling. So my personal favorite radio of choice, I love the Kenwood HDC media tuners. They don't have the CD player because I don't listen to CDs these days. Everything's on media. And with a Phillips head screwdriver and a 10 millimeter socket, I can change out a radio in the Cadillacs in 20 minutes, because the way it's laid out was very easy for servicing. And I also replace the speakers, because the speaker construction 20, 30 years ago, it was all paper. The rubber and the foam are all rotted out, you know, distorts on bass. But changing the head units out on these cars is very easy. It makes life a lot better to live with them. And because there's so much room in the dash, I can run the little wire for the microphone for Bluetooth.
Ah. Yeah, you got acres of room for the dash. Oh, yeah, cool. Well, I'm glad you've updated those. I just had to update a 16-year-old BMW SUV with a new radio. It went pretty well. Got a couple things I need left to do. Hey, we got to take a quick break here. And when we come back, Tom Lawler, and I didn't apprise him of this, but he knows the show well enough. Tom, I'm expecting a tip of the week from Tom Lawler. Something that people should, you know, at least remember the show by, something valuable that people can walk away with. More importantly, something that'll hold them through the commercial break. So we'll do that. I love the story, man. Getting a Cadillac stuck up to the axle, and it's the one that your fiance is going to drive. He may not have known that then, but you know, the fiance drives it in the wedding. Ooh. This Week in Radio Tech, brought to you in part by our friends at Innovonics. Place to get that is Broadcaster's General Store. The Innovonics Aaron 655 is the product. It's a great, awesome product. Check it out. We'll be right back.
The Aaron 655 is the latest addition to the Innovonics family of rebroadcast receivers, designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aaron 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aaron 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, three bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports dayparting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
Got to check this thing out. The website is terrific from Inovonics. It's InovonicsBroadcast.com. Inovonics has one N, well, one at the beginning, InovonicsBroadcast.com. And you can actually try the different products out on their website. You don't have to call and get a demo, try to do all that stuff. Just go to the website and check it out. And the Aran 655, an amazing box, especially if you're running a translator off of an HD 2 broadcast. So check them out. Thanks a lot. You can also get these from Broadcasters General Store. Their website is bgs.cc. And, you know, you ought to memorize their phone number. It's 352-622-7700. For Broadcasters General Store. Thanks a lot, Inovonics and BGS, for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. All right, we're finishing up Kirk Harnack and Tom Lawler. Tom's had some good war stories to tell, and I'm glad the Cadillac got cleaned up and was usable by the precious fiance to drive to the wedding. That's so awesome. I'm sure there was some mud to spray off at some point. Tom, looking for a tip of the week. Have you got something for us?
Well, I'm not sure how well-known these devices are that I'm going to talk about, but you mentioned redoing your car stereo, and it's something that I've done a lot of times because I like to change out the radios because sometimes I want to try out a different tuner, see how a different amp will sound. I would recommend, if you haven't heard of these yet, Posi Lock connectors. Have you heard of them or used them before?
I have heard the name. Yeah. Yeah.
So instead of having to, crimp together the wires, you use the Posilock connectors. You put the wire in and you just twist and lock it down with a thread, and that way you're not crimping. You don't have to trim or cut the stereo connector or the factory wiring. You can unhook the stereos, the stereo harness, reuse everything, and you're not soldering, you're not crimping, you're not you're not risking damaging the wiring at all. It's these Posilock connectors are truly great if you're working with wiring and you don't want to do anything permanently, but you just need it to work and work well.
I'm glad you brought these up. Actually, I did recently use some when I put the new Kenwood into the BMW. I forgot that's what they were called. But the folks at Crutchfield, that's who I got the radio from, they said, we're going to send you some Posilock connectors for free. You need to try them out. They're really good for the things that we got to strip some wires and hook them together. And I thought, well, I'll just use, my butt splice connectors. And I thought, oh, wait a minute. The butt splices, you've got to cut the wires shorter if you want to redo something. And the Posilocks, I'm glad you pointed out that you can undo them. I didn't really think about that, but you can undo them. Okay. Awesome. Good advice. I'll put a link to Posilock connectors in the show notes, as well as some of the other things that Tom has talked about. That's great advice, Tom. And for somebody who's had to swap out the radio a few times in your car, we know it's a voice of experience. Awesome.
Well, again, you get tired of having to cut the wire shorter and shorter and shorter whenever you swap out a radio.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Good deal. Tom Lawler, I appreciate you being our guest on This Week in Radio Tech. It's been great to get to know you for the hour here and the time we spent together on the pre-show. I look forward to seeing you in person when all this COVID stuff is over. Thanks for being a great sport.
You're very welcome, Kirk. I look forward to seeing you next NAB or the next local anything. If you're always welcome here in Pittsburgh. If you want to come, I'll take you out for some lovely pierogies.
I think maybe your friend, I guess he works for a competing company. Doesn't Bill Bennett live around Pittsburgh somewhere? Do you know Bill?
I do not know Bill. He might live around here. I'm not sure. I don't know Bill at all.
We've had Bill on the show as a quick guest too. We need to get our Pittsburgh buddies together. I used to go to Pittsburgh quite a bit when I was first working for Telos Alliance. I visited a lot of engineers in the Pittsburgh area. Tom Lawler, thank you again for being here on the show. We appreciate you. Hey, would you tell your friends about This Week in Radio Tech? Would you please go to the YouTube page and subscribe to the channel, This Week in Radio Tech? Look for this logo right here. We have some older channels that were part of it when we did the show, 10, 11 years ago. But look for this logo, the Tort logo, and it's from the GFQ network. And I really appreciate if you'd subscribe to that. And, of course, give us a like. That always helps out a lot. Thanks a lot to Suncast, our producer for the show. Great job, Suncast, as usual. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ network, where you'll find lots of other podcasts. All right, we got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.